meeting has been announced, and it is always the most difficult for me to be able to, and I will get that switched, don't worry. It is the most difficult for me to be able to remember everything that I would like to say to the congregation, and usually I go back home and think, oh, I didn't mention that or this, and I guess if I did mention everything that I appreciated, we'd be here for several hours, and we don't have time for all of these things, but I do want to thank again this congregation as a whole and the elders specifically for the invitation to come. And I want to thank the elders for accommodating my schedule and allowing me to end this meeting on a Thursday night. It allows me to travel home on Friday to catch my breath on Saturday before I'm back on Sunday again. But more than that, you think about a number of meetings each year, and you have to travel on one Saturday, and you travel back home the next Saturday with my kids in school. Those Saturdays are the days that I have with them, and a couple of Saturdays for every meeting, and then you multiply that. That's a lot of Saturdays. That's a lot of days and lives of my kids that I won't get back, and I appreciate that you're allowing me to be back and to spend that day with them. I know that it's maybe not as what we normally do, but it certainly helps me out, and I hope it wasn't too much of an inconvenience for the church here. I appreciate so much the song leaders this week. You've just done an outstanding job in selecting the songs that would direct our minds towards spiritual things, eternal things, and to exhort and to teach and admonish one another, and that has so much to do with the success of a gospel meeting. So thank you for the effort that you put into that. And the congregation here, as far as your hospitality, I don't know what I can say to express how kind and generous you've been. If it is possible to feed a person to death, you made a valiant effort. And I'm just kidding. I could have eaten less. I know. I could have eaten smaller portions. But I enjoyed my time with you, and that was a treat to get to be with several of you here in this congregation. We were able to, you provided lunches and dinners for me, and the best part of it was just renewing those bonds and the deep friendship and the fellowship that we share with one another. So I've been looking forward to this meeting for a long time. I know I'll be sad as I'm leaving and going back home, even though as excited as I am to see them, it's going to be difficult to say goodbye to all of you. Very special place in my heart. As I've mentioned before, I remember very well the first time I preached here in the summer of 1993. It probably would have been early June. I don't have the exact date, but I had not been preaching very long in Perryton, and I came down here and spoke. And the church here began supporting me, and my relationship began there with all of you, and some of you who weren't even here at that time. But this congregation has been very dear to me because of that, because of the sacrifice that you made to help me in those early years. And that was many, many years ago, but they're very good memories that I have with all of you. So I want to thank you for that, and pray that you will keep up the good work here. I was telling the elders and several others, it's just good this week to see the great environment here, the love and the encouragement, the joy that we talked about on Sunday morning that exists, and that's something that it's a prize, it's a treasure, and it's certainly something that is a gift from God, but a lot of churches don't take hold of that, and they don't manifest that in their assemblies and in their time with each other, and I hope that you'll continue to do that. Also, ask the elders if they'd mind if I mention one more thing before we get started this evening, and that is the fact that each summer, since I've moved to Blue Springs, we have had a weekend mini gospel meeting or a lectureship, whatever you want to call it. They've chosen to call it a youth lecture in the summer, and it starts on a Friday night. We have two lessons, and then we have about four studies on Saturday, and then we have our three services on Sunday, then a singing. It is fast and furious. It's a lot packed into just a few days, but we have a lot of young people that come from Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Kansas, Missouri, that come in to be a part of that, and it's a very encouraging time. Now, while it's called a youth lecture, and I know a lot of people say, why are we having a youth lecture? Everyone's invited, and we have probably as many adults there as what we do young people, but the point is that we are taking time to designate and to focus on some lessons that are primarily what young people need to be studying, what they need to be hearing at that time in their life. But everyone is invited. We would love for you to come. We had about 18 from the area down in Lubbock and Seminole that came up this summer, and it'd be wonderful if we could get some more there. It's a very encouraging time, and Brother Bruce Reeves is going to be speaking with me in that lectureship this next summer in 2017, and we'll obviously be ready to give a defense as the title, so we're going to be talking about some things that young people should have the capability to defend about their faith. And we're even going to talk about some of the issues, for instance, why did God do certain things in the Old Testament? I know when I was a young person, I didn't understand some of those things, wiping out an entire nation, things like that. We're going to delve into some of that and seek to answer some of those questions, but primarily giving a defense for what we stand for and what we believe, and to equip you so that you'll have the confidence to be able to speak to others your age. You have a great opportunity at this time in your life, and we hope that you'll come and be a part of that. We'll provide, to the best of our ability, we'll try to provide a place for you to stay, somebody's house, and it'll be a very edifying time. With that said, then, I'd like to begin our study this evening. I knew I'd forget something, and probably maybe one of the most important things, and that's the hospitality that the nuns have provided for me this week. And I wouldn't have expected any different. They have kept me in their homes several times in gospel meetings in Tucumcari. We've been a part of each other's lives for a number of years now, going back pre-2000, I know, probably at least 99. And it has been a wonderful experience, just a wonderful friendship and brotherly love that we share for one another. Being a part of their kids' lives and now their grandkids' lives, it's just amazing. And this is just a wonderful thing about the family that we have in Christ. And it's not just with the nuns. With so many of you, that's the case. But they've provided so much for me this week. I love them dearly and wish that I could repay them in some way. But I'm certain that there will be opportunities for us to share in things with each other in the future. If you're like me, probably there have been times in your life that you have thought to yourself as you've heard something said, maybe a radio pundit, or maybe you read something, a saying, maybe on social media you saw a statement that was published, and you thought to yourself, man, I wish I would have thought of that. Maybe it's something that's just really pithy and it's profound, and you think, that is really, really sharp. That just really makes people think, I wish I would have thought of that. Maybe it's something, it's a concept that you've always known, but you've never really formulated it into words, and you wish that you would have expressed it in that way. I've had that experience a number of times. And the fact is, sometimes we're surprised that people of the world have an insight and an understanding of things in a very profound way. As a matter of fact, the Bible speaks about this. The Apostle Paul, as he wrote to Titus in Titus chapter 1, verses 12 through 13, he said, one of them, a prophet of their own, speaking about among the Cretans, not a Christian, but just one of their own. He said, one of their own said, Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons. Paul said, this testimony is true. Paul is essentially saying, I couldn't have said it better. Their own philosophers recognized this. I almost like, I wish I would have said that first, but they said it themselves. You know, Jesus made the observation in Luke chapter 16 and in verse 8. He said, for the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I have to say, sometimes they are. That Jesus experienced that, and sometimes people of the world seem to observe things sometimes that we ought to see first. And we sometimes learn from some of their observations, some of their wisdom. You know, this is something that happened to me back in 2004. And if you're old enough to have been listening to the radio and to music back in 2004, you might remember a song that came out in August of 2004 entitled Live Like You Were Dying. And you, if you were old enough to listen to music and you didn't hear that song, you must have been under a rock somewhere, because it was eventually played again and again and again and again and again. But in August of 2004, August 29th to be exact, or August 24th actually to be exact, Tim McGraw came out with his song, Live Like You Were Dying, and it had that impact on me because it spoke about living our lives in such a way that we were prepared to die, that we were really getting the most out of life and living every day as if it were our last. Now, this wasn't written by Tim McGraw. I think Tim Nichols and Craig Wiseman wrote the song. He's the one that sang it, so we associate it with him. And I remember hearing this song being played throughout August, or at the end of August, and then throughout September, and it was soaring to the top of the charts. It was number one for 7 weeks in a row. The words of the song would urge listeners to live like they were dying. And the words of the song, it approaches the subject from kind of a worldly or a temporal point of view. You might remember it suggests that if we would live like we were dying, we might go skydiving or mountain climbing or maybe even ride a bull in order to get the most out of life. And I can assure you I don't have to do any of those things to get the most out of life. But the point of it is that we should do those things that are really going to bring the most enrichment to our lives. And sometimes we get so busy in things that don't matter that we fail to really enjoy life as it ought to be. And you know, when I mention that, skydiving and mountain climbing and riding a bull, there's certainly nothing inherently wrong with those things. But these are just not at the top of the list for someone who has an awareness of eternity. These would not be the first things that we would want to do. Now, to be fair, the song also recommends that we find time for our aging parents and be the husband that we ought to be, and to be a true friend and to love with a sweet, genuine love, to use kinder words. Now, these are the kinds of things that we would think about as a Christian if we were going to truly live like we were dying. But you know, as we think about this concept, and what hit me as I was listening to it is, it was exactly one of those moments where I thought, I should have said that. I should have formulated that idea and put it into some type of a lesson, because while we know that this is a biblical concept, as a matter of fact, God spoke to Hezekiah at one point in 2 Kings chapter 20 and in verse 1, he said, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. Now, we know the rest of the story. Hezekiah appealed to God, and God extended his life by a number of years, but he still died. But my point here is this. That is that God reveals to us that if we are aware that we are dying, that there is something that we need to do, and he calls it setting your house in order. What does that mean, to set your house in order? Obviously, it means that there's a certain way that we would live or a certain way that we would conduct ourselves if we know that we're going to die. And essentially, first things become much more apparent. We respect the priority of first things. The problem is that in our lives, we are so completely busy with a lot of things that are not first things. And we're so busy with them that we fail to observe and to realize that we're not doing the first things. And many times it's too late before we recognize that. You know, the Bible teaches this same principle that we are to live like we're dying. The Bible teaches that we are dying in the sense that we are winding down toward death every day. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and in verse 16. Therefore we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing. You know what that verse is telling you? That every one of us here tonight has a terminal disease. You know, when a friend of ours is diagnosed with a terminal illness, meaning that they are certain to die, they're going to die from this, they're not going to recover, they're not going to get better, I want you to know that you've got a terminal illness. It's called mortality. Every one of us, we're not going to get better. We're going to get older every day. I realize that for young people, there's an apex in life. They're still blooming. But for many of us, there is a winding down. I've definitely hit that apex and gone over. And so we're not getting better. We may be getting better inwardly. Hopefully we are as Christians. We're being renewed day by day inwardly. But outwardly, as far as dying in this life, we're all dying. We're all terminal. And here's the thing. In order for us to live like we were dying, we have to realize that we are dying. My best friend growing up, best man at my wedding, faithful Christian, one of the deacons there at 84th Street in Oklahoma City, Steve Cook. His father, I remember, was diagnosed with cancer in 2002. And it was pancreatic cancer. And we had known several other people who had been diagnosed with that, and we were certain that the end was relatively near. And I remember when we found out, because there had been several men, strangely, in that little town I grew up in Tuttle, Oklahoma, that had recently died from pancreatic cancer, and so everyone knew what this meant. And I remember David Cook's oldest son was the police chief there in Tuttle. And the fire chief there used to trade horses with David. Everyone knew David Cook. He raised horses and bred them. And this fire chief had traded horses with him for years. He was a man actually in his early 40s. But he was devastated by the fact that David had been diagnosed with this terminal illness, and he was just overwhelmed with grief. That he wasn't going to have David around anymore, that he was going to lose his dear friend, his horse trainer. A week later, that fire chief had a massive heart attack and died. David lived two more years before he passed away. My point is this, that sometimes we put so much on that, well, this person's been diagnosed, or they have this terminal illness, we've got to realize that we're all dying. They might know that they only have a month or a year. We don't know that we even have a day. Of course, neither do they. We've got to start living with a sharper awareness of the fact that regardless of our age, regardless of our health, we are not guaranteed another hour. And that we will all die because the outward man is perishing. The Bible reveals that we all have an appointment with death and with the judge of all men. Hebrews 9 and in verse 27, it is appointed for men to die. And then the Bible reveals to us that we don't know if it's going to be today or tomorrow or some other time. James chapter 4 and verses 13 through 14. James says, come now, you who say today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It's even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. I bet you've got some plans for tomorrow. I bet you've got some plans for this weekend. You're thinking, if I can just get this done, then I'll be able to do this. And you have no idea that tomorrow may be your last day. Today may be your last day. How are you living your life? And if you knew that, let me ask you this. If you knew that today was your last day, you're not going to see tomorrow morning. Or if you knew that tomorrow is your last day and you're not going to see Saturday morning, what would you be doing tomorrow? Would you be busied with the same things, worried about the same things, or would there be some first things that would rise to the top? I'm certain that there would be. And the point of this is do those first things. It's telling us that we need to then, since we don't know when our day will come, we need to live every day as if it were our last. Remember in verse 14, you do not know what will happen tomorrow. Your life is a vapor. Verse 17, therefore to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. What do you know that you need to do? That doesn't mean that you've got to do everything today, but there's some first things. There are some first things that need to be done, and you know it. You're probably compartmentalizing those things. I don't want to think about those right now. I bet there's something that you do. I bet there's something you do tonight before we leave. Yes, we're taught to live each day as if it were our last. Charles Spurgeon, famed Baptist preacher from the 1800s, he made a statement one time that applies to this. He said, men have been helped to live by remembering that they must die. That's what we're saying. We actually will live our lives better now if we are aware of the fact that we must die. That's what it's about. You know, the Bible says in the 39th Psalm and in verse 4 through 6, Lord, make me to know my end and what is the measure of my days that I may know how frail I am. Young people, are you listening to this? This applies to you too. Indeed, you have made my years as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best state is but vapor. Verse 6. Surely every man walks about like a shadow. Surely, listen, they busy themselves.